in there. I'd love you to draw me the picture of
I'd love to.
Web services.
Okay.
Yeah, and because it helps me as a developer get an idea of what part I need to focus on for the next year while we go into the PDC almost a year from now.
Okay. All right.
That might be the same thing to talk about.
While we erase the whiteboard, you can take a picture of my favorite parts.
Which one is that?
That one right there.
As proposed by
our job as PMs in the end of Microsoft.
Yeah.
To make sure that we don't end up like that. I like to remind myself.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good cartoon.
All right, so let's draw the soap layer cake diagram, what have you. So I think at the bottom we have XML. Clearly, and the info set, there could be alternate encodings to XML, but the key thing here is you have a consistent data model.
Okay.
You have things like below here you may have different transports, so this would be the transport layer, this would be the data model layer. So you may have HTTP here, which is a very popular transport for SOAP.
Yep.
You could have TCP, you could have other things as well, like SMTP.
Yep.
And people do have different bindings for SOAP into these things. We've introduced one called the UDP binding. Lets you send a SOAP message over a UDP database.
Yep.
Kind of a useful thing to do sometimes. We have above that the messaging layer. And here we have things like SOAP, things like WS addressing. And this layer basically, kind of provides you the framing. You could also probably put MTOM in here, because MTOM lets you, put attach, large binary objects to a SOAP envelope in a way that is composable with this infoset thing.
Okay.
On top of that, you have, we typically like to draw it this way. You have metadata that kind of sits like here. So this is metadata. And actually, we'll put things like WSDL. Call this the metadata. Here. WSDL, WS policy. And here, metadata exchange. And these things are kind of interesting. If you're a COM developer, this is IDLE. That's all it is. This thing is, the transactions required attribute in COM, that says, use a transaction for this particular method.
Right.
That's what this is. This is, you need to use reliable messaging to talk to me. This is, you need to use security, both integrity and confidentiality. You need to both sign and encrypt the message. Oh, and by the way, you need to use these particular token types and this particular key length.
Okay.
Right? So things that aren't really expressed in, IDL, so to speak. They're not about kind of how the message looks on the wire. They're about what kind of things I need to do in order to properly be able to talk to you, kind of that are a higher level than just operation syntax. And then metadata exchange, if, again, you're a COM person, this is just unknown query interface, right? This is, what do you do? Like, tell me about yourself. What kind of interfaces do you support? What kind of, what port types do you have? What bindings do you have? And in fact, these things are effectively communicated from the service to the application developer through this protocol, metadata exchange.
Okay.
And then on top of that, we have, we call it kind of the assurance level. Assurances. I'll actually put it kind of to the side because you can circumvent all these things. So there's security. We have to draw bigger because it's just a big box. There is reliable messaging. There is transactions. And this here would be WS reliable messaging. Here would be WS coordination, which is nothing but a kind of an extensible framework for coordination types, and the most important one being atomic transaction. Okay? And security has things like base message level security, things like WS secure conversation, which is kind of TLS for SOAP. Right? It's basically, you know, kind of having a long-running session with another service. You need to have a, you know, a conversation or a session, right? There's something called WS Trust, which is kind of a somewhat misnamed spec, or unfortunately named spec. All that is, hey, I want to be able to trade security tokens with you. You know, I have an identity, it's a Kerberos identity, but I know that I need to talk to you using a SAML identity. There's some third-party trust broker out there that knows how to translate my Kerberos identity into a SAML token for you. This is all that is. This is request security token, get security token back. Right? So it's almost metadata exchange for security tokens, if that makes sense. And then there's things on top of you know, all of this. Like there are application-level protocols. So we'll draw them way up top here, app protocols. And we have plenty of those. You know, we have things like WS Federation. So, you know, this allows you to do single sign-on over the web using a combination of these things, like trust and secure conversation and addressing. There's another one called WS Management. And this one, you know, is basically a way, you know, to go use, again, this all this protocol framework to go be able to manage, you know, hardware or software. There's another one called, there's the Windows, the next generation Windows printing protocol that's built on top of this whole framework. Right. So we're starting in Windows, in all of Microsoft's products, to go, hey, we need a new protocol. It probably ought to be based on SOAP. So in the same way that managed code is one of those tools in people's tool belt right now where they say, hey, we're going to build a new piece of the operating system or a new piece of Office or something. That tool is kind of a cool tool. It makes me more efficient, more productive. Should I use it? Probably. You know, here's the pros, here's the cons. You know, I'm going to make an engineering decision and do it. But more often than not, you find that people are drawn to managed code as a cool, efficient new tool. Likewise, we have so much infrastructure now built around this set of protocols, set of protocol framework components, that people naturally want to go build their next generation protocol on top of this stuff. And there's actually another thing here, just to be complete, which is, you know, I would call this, you know, common patterns, common messaging patterns, that we decided that would be useful to go, you know, that really sit on top of this layer over here. They're independent of the assurances. So things like WS eventing. This is basically nothing other than, hey, there's in the world there exists solicit response kind of, you know, message exchange patterns. I send you a subscribe and you start sending me notifications. Let's go, you know, just write down what a subscribe message looks like. Right? And so things like WS management use that. There is something called WS transfer, which is nothing other than just HTTP for the web. Right? Like it's great to have verbs like get and put and create and delete, you know, the CRUD kind of operations, and just write them down so that people don't have to go reinvent them every time. And so management, you know, clearly when you want to manage a resource, you may want to get its state, you may want to set its state. So it uses WS transfer for those kinds of things. And we have, you know, other kind of common patterns that we've written down just so that other people won't have to do it all over again.
Right. Now, looking at this board, I see a lot of complexity.
Okay.
So I see a lot that, you know, as a developer, I'm just, oh, man, I have to spend the next 3 years of my life learning all these different things. Is that what Indigo is going to try to solve for the developer to make
the
whole board easier to
adopt? So I think all of the vendors recognize that interoperability is going to be achieved by doing this. But as I said in my PDC talk last year, the best thing about this talk is that none of you will ever have to know anything that, you know, I have talked about. Only maybe, you know, like a dozen people in the world will have to really kind of understand the, you know, these specs at, you know, their full complexity, right? Understand exactly how to implement each and every one of these things, because vendors will have frameworks. You know, we will have support for this in the .NET frameworks, and we call that, you know, piece of code Indigo. IBM and Sun and BEA and others are planning on doing the same thing. Many of them, most of them, obviously, already have SOAP implementations. A lot of them already have double security implementations. Most people are starting on reliable messaging implementations. IBM announced that they have AT now in the next version of WebSphere. WSDL has been popular for quite some time. So a lot of this stuff is now in real time finding its way into kind of the core platform products that you know, companies, platform companies like IBM and Microsoft and, you know, BA and Sun are putting out. So we feel pretty good about that. You know, we'll be able to shield complexity from the developers. And back to my point about frameworks, I must have the framework picture here somewhere. I wish I did, because if I pull it out for you, we should go into somebody's office and just take a look at it. If I pull it out for you, you'd have more boxes, more, you know, little, you know, names of classes by far than anything you see on this board.
Yeah.
So we think this is at the right level of complexity. I mean, we're actually doing something substantial here,
yeah,
right? I mean, we're putting together a set of, you know, a set of a framework that will sustain our architecture well into the future. And if you look at all those class libraries that you see on all those posters, you know, there are, you know, probably an order of magnitude more things that are written down. But again, you don't have to know about all of them. The nice thing about the Microsoft development environment is you have tools that help you cope with that complexity by, you know, helping you drag control onto a form, and voila, a lot of stuff is just set up for you. And then you start writing just logic.
Yeah.
Right?
What's the, whenever a new platform comes along, mm-hmm. right, and this is really a new platform, this is like the Macintosh, though, mm-hmm. the Windows 1.0, mm-hmm. you know, what's the killer app going to be? What is, you know, when we wake up one morning and read eWeek or InfoWorld,
yep.
what is the
yep.
the new app that's going to come along that built on this kind of platform that we don't have today, or mm-hmm. or is just so hard to build today?
It's a great question, and I think some of them you're already kind of seeing. So, Atom, for example, is the, you know, syndication format that San Ruby and others came up with. Atom builds basically on top of this SOAP thing and the WSDL thing, and it has something that looks super like WS Transfer. Whether it actually ever adopts WS Transfer or not is actually not that big of a deal. You're seeing people build application protocols based on this today, right? And Atom is a very popular syndication format, and Tim Bray believes that it'll, you know, overtake the rest of them. And so our blog sphere is going to be built on top of web services. Things like single sign-on, web single sign-on, okay. are killer apps for this particular space. And not just browser-based, but really kind of full, rich, client kind of applications that I can federate single sign-on across, you know, different companies, different trust domains. I mean, if you think about the complexities that people have to face with today, you know, I have a set of users, and now if I want my set of users to go, you know, kind of access resources in your system, you have to know about all my set of users. What if I fire somebody? What if they quit? Now you need to know about that. You need to go erase them out of their database, out of your database, and so on, right? So this idea that you may want to go, you know, extend your reach of, you know, your users into somebody else's network, into somebody else's trust domain, you know, it's kind of a, you know, it's an important, it's a critical part of today's business, and yet we don't have great ways of doing that today. And we think that, you know, web services is going to be a killer app for that.
Right.
So I think there are many kinds of, you know, domains where you're going to see web services protocols take off. Now, in the end, I think the thing that you may actually say, Marie, you know, like, we have protocols for all this stuff today already. Maybe not federated identity, but management. We have SNMP. We have all this stuff. You know, what's new about SOAP? And I'll tell you what's new about SOAP. It's the fact that everything is self-describing, and I can go do an AdWeb reference on you, and just be able to go program to it using strongly typed proxies. I mean, I have a unified programming experience for everything now. And that's the vision. The vision is eventually all of Windows becomes that kind of, you know, becomes exposed using that kind of methodology. Right? I now have a metadata-rich environment where I can go aggregate a certain component of the operating system. I can go talk to it. Like, I, you know, one of the coolest demos in the last year's PDC was you went and talked to the actual task bar, you know, on the, or, you know, the little bar on the side of the Longhorn shell, and you added things to it by using web services. You got the WSDL for it. You, you know, it generated some proxies for you. You went off and said, put a new gadget in that particular window, and here's the, you know, what it's supposed to do, and it just worked. I mean, so everything is programmable in a uniform manner. And that kind of uniformity is what really kind of fuels the, you know, developer productivity and the next wave of applications that I think is going to emerge.
Well, is business going to change because of this? I mean, are you going to see some fundamental shifts in, I mean, the way we saw when the PC got into business?
I think this is a more...
I mean, I've seen a pistachio factory run on a tablet PC, you know?
That's right. And that's a pretty, you know, those are pretty big shoes to fill. That's a pretty, you know, large bill to be able to fill. I don't think that this particular architecture will be, you know, will usher that kind of change.
Okay.
I think that it's going to be a little bit more subtle. I think you're going to see that it's going to become inherently easier for businesses to integrate functionality, integrate process across each other, and over time it will lead to kind of a more efficient digital enterprise. So today, you know, you have, you know, e-commerce happening today between businesses clearly, right? I mean, you know, you got, you know, big auto manufacturers that have 50,000 suppliers, and the suppliers are in charge of making sure that, you know, the inventories for the automaker are like exactly supplied right and, you know, replenished at the right times. And we have systems today and they work, but they're so brittle, expensive. You know, auto manufacturers, they take a piece of software and a piece and a computer and they put it in their supplier's office, all 50,000 of them, because they need that. Like today, the only way they do things is tightly coupled, you know, and that whenever they change that, you know, centralized computer, you know, in that auto manufacturer, all of the suppliers have to change their software. You have to ship new PCs to them. I mean, it's just amazing. It works, but it's amazing that it works, but it's hard work. And I think that for that auto manufacturer, sure, they could save a lot of money by having a more inherently loosely coupled way of integrating these systems and having things like federated identity that doesn't, you know, doesn't require them to keep a user account for every one of their suppliers and things like that. But is that going to change their world in a significant way? Probably not for that application. But it's going to enable a wealth of other applications just like that one that were previously too expensive to build.
Interesting. If some MVPs were here, developers were here, what would they say, horse pecky on Microsoft's vision?
That's interesting.
Because you just gave me Microsoft's vision, right? For
sure. They would ask a few questions. They would ask, for example, is all this really necessary? There are a lot of people who get stuff done with HTTP and XML.
Yeah.
You know, that's actually one of the big debates in technical debates in the community is, you know, between something called, you know, the movement that people often call REST, representational, you know, that's named after representational state transfer, which is Roy Fielding's terminology for the architecture of the web, of HTTP, and the SOAP model. And it's kind of interesting. Yet Microsoft never quite understood that controversy because we've always thought about this whole model as a pay-as-you-go model, you know. At the very bottom, there's HTTP, you know, so you need that, and you need XML, you need that too. And on top of that, if you want to, you can put a little SOAP envelope. And all that SOAP envelope is, beyond this XML that you send to, you know, back and forth, it's like a tag called SOAP envelope, a tag called SOAP header, and a tag called SOAP body. And if you actually partition your XML that way, you basically just wrap it. You know, you put that payload that you previously had just kind of lying around as a root element, you put that in a body tag, all of a sudden you can scale up to a lot of other kinds of capabilities. If you want to do security that's message-based later on, like for example, you know, one of the big differences between message-based security and TLS-based security is with message-based security, I can actually keep the message around, and it's still encrypted after I'm done with the particular session, right? That kind of longevity on the security of the message is kind of important for e-business. It really is. And so if I ever want to do that, the fact that I ate this little thing called soap is well worth it. If we see an XML, you know, datagram without a soap header, we just got to process it. If we see the soap header, we process it too. It's like an if statement in our code. Doesn't really cost us a whole lot to support this. And we think that it actually buys us a whole lot too. So, you know, it's worth it. Like, we want to support all this stuff. And once you start supporting SOAP, you can, you know, start paying as you go. Right? You can say, hey, you know, now I want some of this other stuff. I think that some of this other stuff is kind of important to me. But I don't need to go swallow it whole. And that's, in some sense, the biggest difference between this framework approach and the DCOM Corbo approach, which was a big monolithic protocol, and you know, you kind of had to eat it all up or have none of it.
Right. What does Microsoft get out of this? You know, in other words, why should I help Microsoft get richer by adopting this, right?
Or well,
help you get your paycheck with this year or whatever?
That's a great question. I'll tell you what Microsoft gets out of this. In the end, you know, we want to sell software. Our customers told us, we have software from other people too, and hardware, by the way. And we go, yeah, that's unfortunate. But, you know, at the same time, we go, that's life, you know, okay, maybe you'll buy from other vendors too. In fact, seriously, the more we reach into the enterprise, the more we realize how heterogeneous the environments are. And doing this for Microsoft helps us be able to sell, you know, more of our software into that space. And it's something that our customers just demand of us. They say, hey, I have a J2E environment today on the server. I would love to build rich clients for that thing. Except this little detail, which is, you know, all that stuff runs on, you know, some other vendor's platform, and your stuff runs on Windows. Can you make it work for me? If you do, I'll write more rich client applications. Yeah, that makes sense. We'll do that. And even more importantly for us, you know, on the server, as we, you know, kind of ramp up, you know, our enterprise server offerings that have really kind of come of age, you know, in the last few years. Nobody, you know, in the world these days does not take Microsoft's server products seriously anymore, which was not true probably, you know, 5 or 10 years ago. It's even more important to integrate with, you know, glasshouse kinds of operations, which have been, you know, in operations for 10, 15, 20 years and will probably continue to be in operations for that long in the future. You know, people don't rewrite those systems very often. And so you have no choice other than to integrate with those things. And so, you know, this is kind of, in some sense, a maturation process for Microsoft, where we've recognized that the world is heterogeneous and we want to play in that world. It is important, though, that we believe that interoperability is achieved on the wire. And, you know, people ask us, why don't you adopt, you know, J2EE or things like that? And, you know, our answer to that is always, we think that we actually have better developer frameworks. We can make Windows developers more efficient by having our developer framework target Windows in a very deep and rich way. And so we're doing our developers a service by offering them, you know, kind of all that rich functionality. And we offer them a lot of tools. We offer them a lot of languages. We offer them a lot of choice. And by integrating with all these other systems, we offer them the last thing that they want, which is being able to work with the stuff I have today. And so we think it's a pretty, you know, it's a pretty good, pretty strong story for developers. And, you know, in the end, whether you buy into this or not, you know, that's not going to make Microsoft rich. Microsoft, you know, is not looking to make any money off of the protocol architecture, we think that indirectly it's going to help us sell more software, and that's why we're doing it. You know, and the other kind of, like, I guess, more subtle reason for doing this is, you know, our customers are dealing with complexity all the time, and we try to help them. We ourselves are dealing with a lot of complexity, too, right? I mean, yeah. Windows has tens of millions of lines of code in it.
Yeah.
It's a pretty big program. And it's hard to go evolve that program. You know, and if we have an architecture that lets us componentize Windows in such a way to be able to deal with that complexity, to contain that complexity, that makes us be able to be a little bit more nimble. So, you know, we've invented this particular architecture along with our partners for, you know, the entire world. But we are included as, you know, one of those vendors that is going to benefit from having a kind of architecture like this to be able to go build the kinds of, you know, the programs at the kind of scale that we do.
Right.
So,
what kinds of questions should the developers be asking about this new world?
I think they should be asking, okay, you got specs, that's great. Piece, you know, words on a piece of paper, and the fact that, you know, you've got a bunch of vendors on them that are saying the same thing is great. How do we really know that this is going to be interoperable? And I think the answer to that is it's a lot of hard work between now and when we actually ship the product to be able to get interoperability. And I think that's one of those things that you constantly strive for more and more of.
Are you guys going to have interop fests where you invite people up here?
Great question. So, yeah. Indeed we are.
There's a driver at interop fest going on right now in 2020.
Exactly. So that's kind of the way that you do it. You can go code that stuff, but in the end, if you don't actually have these things talking to each other in the lab before you ship them, you won't get the interoperability. So part of our workshop process is, you know, having these kinds of interop fests where people bring their implementation. You know, that kind of stuff started with Soap Builders. You know, that was kind of the initial community for people who were building soap stacks. And people used to get together either in person or on the internet and just kind of interop test their stuff together. And that was very successful for making soap, you know, real. And we're basically doing exactly the same thing with our workshop process. And as we mature Indigo, we're starting to bring Indigo to those workshop processes. And likewise, I think we're going to end up working one-on-one with a bunch of different vendors to make sure that, you know, like, to work out the tweaks, to work out, you know, the kinks here and there that develop. Okay, you interpreted the spec this way, we interpreted it that way, split it down the middle, and, you know, we'll do what you're, you know, kind of doing here, and, you know, you'll do what we're doing over there. And in the end, it's a game of give and take, and you end up with something that's interoperable. I think what developers can do, you know, to make that process as, you know, as expedited as possible is really kind of demand interoperability of their vendors.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing it with us. We're answering the call.
Yeah. What's the agenda for between now and September when the next PDC is? What should developers be looking at, learning? You know, what would you hope that they know coming into the PDC so when you have a conversation with them, you know, that you can have a good conversation?
So I think looking at the ASP.NET Web Services stack today, it's going to be very informative for people because that's kind of that, you know, kind of service-oriented, loosely coupled, excuse me, model for development is what we think, you know, Indigo is going to push you towards. That's going to be the sweet spot, right? So understanding that set of, you know, that set of technologies is a very important thing. You can start building a service-oriented app using, you know, .NET Framework 1.0 or, you know, .NET Framework 1.1, Visual Studio, you know, .NET or Visual Studio 2003. You can do that today.
Yeah.
And you can start adding more features. You can start exploring with the space by using WSI, the Web Service Enhancements product that we have. So we have technologies today that are fully supported that let you build these kinds of applications. I think PDC is going to be the big Indigo, you know, hoo-ha, coming out party. We're going to, you know, we're going to be all excited to show the next generation of developer frameworks and how we've been able to take all of these things and integrate them into one framework. So, you know, not just ASP.NET and WSI, but also .NET Remote Inc. and MSMQ and COM DTC, right? All those things are kind of, you know, kind of merging into a single development framework called Indigo. And if you're a user of one of those things, I think you're very excited because, or at least I, as a former user of all those things, I'm very excited about, you know, being able to use that thing in my apps, not just be able to build it. Right. Because in the end, I'll have one framework that doesn't, you know, kind of have me fall off the cliff. You know, with MSMQ, I love the message-oriented, you know, kind of approach to things. But, you know, does it let me do, you know, some of the other things that I would really like to do? For example, have a very easy programming model, an attributed programming model that says, hey, add reliability to this. You know, does it give me add web reference where I can just get all this rich metadata over, you know, for the other service? No, it doesn't. You know, likewise with ASP.NET, does it give you secure, reliable, transacted today? No, it doesn't really. So integrating all these assets together is going to make it very, you know, easy for developers to pick what, you know, what they're actually going to do. They won't have to pick between kind of all these balkanized different technologies. So I personally am very excited by that.
Awesome. Well, thanks for spending some time with
us. All right.
And explaining this wonderful world of web services.
Sure thing.
And we look forward to seeing you next year at the PDC.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Robert.
Cool.